Welcome to Hometown Highlights, where we sit down with professionals, business owners, and community members. There are so many unique and incredible stories in the individuals and businesses that surround us every day. Here on Hometown Highlights, we bring attention to these stories and bring them to the spotlight. We also want to thank our sponsors at Hitchings Insurance. We appreciate their support in creating this podcast. Now, let's jump into the conversation. Welcome to Hometown Highlights, where we sit down with professionals, business owners, and community members. There are so many unique and incredible stories in the individuals and businesses that surround us every day. Here on Hometown Highlights, we bring attention to these stories and bring them to the spotlight. We also want to thank our sponsors at Hitchings Insurance. We appreciate their support in creating this podcast. Now, let's jump into the conversation. Hello, you are listening to the Hometown Highlights podcast. I'm your co-host, Dom Fry, the insurance guy, here with my other co-host, who has been mistaken for Sean Bradley. He has to watch his head as he goes through, you know, a door clearing, and he makes for a great Chewbacca on Halloween. Ryan Pessel, how are you doing this morning?
Dom, thanks for the introduction. I am well. Thank you for asking.
Good, good. We have a great interview today, a local guy here too, you know, in the Findlay area, a man that is very, very involved in this community. So we're not going to be short of a conversation today, short of topics to talk about. So let's just get straight into it. Let me introduce our guest today. So he is born and raised on his family farm near Genera, Ohio, and his son is the eighth generation of his family to live and work there. He is a graduate of Arlington High School, and he got his bachelor's and master's degree in agriculture education and animal science from The Ohio State University. He is married to his wife, Mary, and they were both OSU 4-H Extension agents when they met 41 years ago in 1980. And today, he is retired as a OSU 4-H Extension agent, and he has three children and two grandchildren, and their family are all graduates of The Ohio State University, where they have 9 degrees from the Buckeyes. Throughout his life, at one time, he was affiliated with 45 different groups and organizations between Hancock County and Ohio State. And today, he is only active on a dozen boards and committees in the area. So just to list a couple of the organizations that he is involved with, he is on the board of the Ohio Corn and Wheat, the presently chairman of the Ohio Small Grain Marketing Board Program. He is in the Findlay Hancock County Community Foundation Board of Directors. He was formerly the board chair, the Hancock County Farm Bureau Board, former president, and he is also for the Hancock County 4-H advisor and an Arlington FFA alumni. I'm getting out of breath, so I will stop there. Let's welcome on our guest, Gary Wilson. Gary, how are you doing this morning?
Very good, Dominic. Thank you.
Good. We are, yeah, excited to have you. It's awesome. Me sitting here just kind of reading everything that you have, you know, accomplished in your life at this point and what you will continue to accomplish with just the different boards and the groups. And, you know, I can tell already just how much of a focus that you have on your community. And, you know, and that's obviously the heart we have behind this podcast is just focusing on the community and positively impacting those around you. And I know that that is something that you have had a tremendous impact on over the years.
Yep. Feel very, very fortunate. We are never any better than the people we surround ourselves with. And I've been very blessed to be around great people, involved in many, many organizations, love farming, love working with farmers, and involved in many, many organizations surrounding that aspect. And I really feel that farming and agriculture is the foundation of everything we do. We certainly would go hungry quickly without farmers out there. And it's been a great, genuine group to be very involved with over several decades.
For sure. For sure. That is awesome. Like you said, fortunate to be able to work with the agriculture community for the years that you have. So let's kind of, you know, just ease into the conversation, just get to know you a little bit more as an individual. First question I have for you, actually, before I even get to the first question, are you much of a technology guy, Gary? You know, do you spend a lot of time on your phone, on a computer, laptop?
Well, you know, in these days, you can't hardly do anything, go anywhere, or yeah. be involved with anyone without having technology. I live by my phone. I've got an iPad that goes with me everywhere. I don't know. It doesn't matter where I go, what trip I will go on. In fact, just last week, I was in Nashville all last week with the U.S. Wheat Associates. I'm on that national board. And any spare moment, you're catching up on emails and catching up with your iPad and iPhone.
For sure. So I guess that kind of answers my question. My question is, you know, if you were an Apple or an Android user, so are you, I obviously you mentioned your iPhone, your iPad, so you are an Apple user. Have you always been an Apple user, or when did that start?
I probably have. I remember getting my first mobile phone. It was actually in 1992, and it was a bag phone. And I've got many funny stories because that's when, before we had towers, and of course I'd be driving to Columbus often. That's where our headquarters was at Ohio State. And I often, if I had stopped to make a phone call, I'd have to stop and get out of the car, stand on the bumper with an antenna to try to get a signal. So if anybody is concerned about getting a signal today, it is much, much better than what it was back then. And I always have had a lot of meetings, and even before your phone was able to be your data assistant, I had a personal data assistant in addition to my phone, and I've been digital on my calendar ever since the mid-90s, really, and that's been very, very easy for me to keep track of all my appointments and meetings and phone calls and all the people I need to keep track of.
That's awesome. Phones have definitely changed dramatically, obviously, in the last 20 years or so. So that's cool that, you know, you have that experience with your first phone. Next question for you, Gary. Are you a morning or a night person?
I'm probably both.
So you just don't sleep?
Sleep is way overrated. What are they talking about? My goodness gracious. I probably don't have as many really early mornings as I used to. I used to do a daily radio show that was on at 6:30. Some of those were recorded, some were live. And so you really had to get up and go on. And many times we always had a lot of livestock. I had to do some morning chores, feeding livestock before I took off in the morning. And, you know, I would average 15 meetings a week back in the day. Most every night I would have a meeting. So you had a lot of evening commitments. So you just got to get up and go whatever the time is and whenever the need arises.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Last question I have for you then. What is something that most people don't know about you? Or maybe, you know, what is a fun fact about you, Gary?
Well, that's really, really interesting. You had mentioned that our son now lives on a farm. We got a little place here just right south of the farm, so we're very close. We're there every day. But, of course, he's the eighth generation. I was the seventh. But being the seventh generation, I was the first generation to have off-farm employment. And to me, that's just incredible. That farm raised six families totally on that farm. That's hard to do these days, but it was done back then. Took a lot of hard work, but they also had a lot of fun. My family was always very much involved with hunting and fishing and all those kinds of things. But it's an interesting thing, an indicator of change that we presently are in that's never really going to go back, probably.
Very interesting. Gary, with everything you've been involved with, do you have some type of nickname? Are you like the Ag Man? I mean,
Well, a long time ago, I remember when Gmail started. Okay, and it wasn't hard getting your Gmail address like it is today, because most everything was already taken. So back in the, I don't know, late 80s or whenever we did that, My email that I still use today is OSUAgman.
Yeah, okay. That was close.
Yeah, well, and I still use that today. That's been a nice handle for me. And, of course, I'm very, very close to Ohio State. That happens to be my 49th year in a row to have Ohio State season football tickets. Mm. So that's always been a fun thing. And I never have a hard time getting rid of tickets. I'm not able to go any more than about one game a year, but there's always somebody that's interested in heading down there. But, you know, egg is my trademark. That's my love. That's my interest. And we live and breathe it, and that's not going to change.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. You know, 49 years as a Buckeye. I mean, that's all my topics to talk about. So you've got 9 degrees in the family, right?
Yeah, we do.
Between the Ohio State University, yeah.
Between my wife and I, and children and their spouses, we are very heavy laden.
Yeah, State Buckeyes. Yeah. So I was going to talk about, you know, Buckeye football and your time at Ohio State. I know, obviously, the university has changed, you know, tremendously since you attended, but what they do down there, it's such a beautiful place. And
oh my goodness.
I can't think of a better place to be than, you know, around 11 o'clock on a Saturday when when football team's playing. It is just such a lively area, and it's it's just everybody forgets all the problems that are going around, and it's just everybody's together. I don't know. It's just awesome. I got goosebumps talking about it because, you know, when that band comes in and it just gets rowdy and loud, and the football, you know, when they kick off, and it's pretty awesome.
It's an experience to behold. Everybody, at least once in their life, needs to get down there. And if they never have found a way, have them give me a call. I'll get them some tickets.
Yeah, we got an 8-year-old son, and we just we actually just got Oregon tickets this year. So my wife is going to take him. Yeah, she's going to take him down for his first game. So he's going to go to quite a game for his first one.
Oh, but, what a game! Whew, that'll be a good one.
Yeah, that's a big non-conference game. So it's always interesting to watch those. But you know, obviously with COVID, they couldn't do their home and home. But at least we get them here and. Should be a good time for him, though.
It'll be fantastic. It'll be an unforgettable experience.
Just
to be there and feel it and see it.
Yep. And sounds like they're gonna go full capacity this year. And
it sounds that way. Neat deal.
Pretty awesome. So one of your strengths, Gary, organizational leadership. I don't think you can be involved in 45 different groups at one time if you don't have this strength, right?
Well, like I said, you're never any better than the people you surround yourself with. And the strength of your relationships is going to be in everything. If you're not able to do something, it's critical that you know someone else that can. Mm-hmm. And by having that group effort, it's just amazing what can be accomplished and what can be done.
So of these 45 organizations that you've been involved in, what's the top to you where you had you got the most fulfillment, the most enjoyment, the most out of, or were able to just be overall satisfied? Does one stand out to you?
Oh, my. There have been so many. I have really enjoyed working closely with the livestock commodity groups, we call them. I'm still very active with Hancock County Cattlemen and the Hancock County Sheep Association. In fact, they've had me be president now of the Sheep Association ever since I retired. But it's just amazing what those groups have done. You know, they always have all kinds of food booths at the county fair. Mm-hmm. The money they make all goes back in to helping those kids. I know the cattleman has just spent an enormous amount of money in their cattle barn and in the sheep area. I mean, they spent $50,000. This was probably 10, 12 years ago, buying all new gates and pens for the kids. And we raised that money, and we never dreamed that we could, but we did. And it's just amazing what can be done with people work together towards a common goal. And, of course, the beneficiaries is our young people. And I often have said that if there's a greatest natural resource in our county, it's our young people. There is so much potential. There's so much to learn. And if we can provide a little bit better experience for those young people growing up, that they will learn how they can also then give back to help the following generation become better. And that's something that I've always held very, very highly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've, you know, our local, obviously the Hancock County Fair here does a really good job with the youth.
Yep.
You know, the shows they put on, the facilities are have really come a long way just in the last 15 years or so.
It really has. It has.
You know, there's a lot of people to thank for that. You're obviously in that conversation and all the groups you're in charge of. But there's, you know, there's thousands of people that have some type of you know, responsibility for making that a better place. And you know, thousands of kids go through there. I you know, one of my favorite things of the year is going to the show arena on Monday and just seeing those kids and they basically work the entire year, and that's kind of their payoff, and just the smile on their faces. Yeah. And how much enjoyment they get out of that show. Yeah. And it's something I really look forward to every year, and just to, you know, do our part and give back to the community and those kids that really work hard. So you know, it's just near and dear. But you know, obviously I was in 4-H growing up. You know, I don't know, do you know the name Terry Good by chance?
Yeah, I sure do. Absolutely.
Yeah. So Terry was my neighbor growing up. So I actually showed his dairy going through the ring.
I knew
me and
Terry
my sister.
Well. Yeah. Son Tony's a veterinarian. Yep. Yes. Yep. Knows the family well.
Yep. So that was my end of 4-H. Oh, they got me into it. So yeah, you know, it worked out good for Terry because then he had some help when the boys were out of school. So my chores were to go feed the local. You know, he just had the heifers over there at the local location by the house, and I'd go over there and do the chores, and it helped him out, and he allowed us to show, and it was pretty neat though. So I learned a lot about ag from Terry, and you know, that on his dairy farm and everything that he had going. So, there's something to be said about youth and the 4-H programs and everything that you know, that does. Not only for the ag community, but for everyone. It teaches those young kids so much responsibility. It's really neat to see. So, yeah.
Well, 57 years ago this year was my first year in 4-H. Had a little lamb that I had there that I showed. And of course, I had 9 years in 4-H, I think, probably. And then I was in FFA till I was 21 back in those days, involved in both 4-H and FFA. An experience that made me into what I am today.
Yeah.
No question about it, that foundation. And so we've got to continue to build that, to strengthen that, and to keep working with that to give those kids that experience.
I agree 100%.
Yeah.
So that was the strength topic. Let's talk about your weakness. My wife says, I say yes to being on too many groups or organizations. I would say your wife is correct.
Yeah, I know she is. But she also was an extension agent, so she knew what she was getting into.
Yeah, yeah.
But one thing early on, we said two extension agents in one family would be one too many. So mm-hmm. she decided to hang back and take care of the livestock. And boy, we had about 130 ewes we were lambing out, had a bunch of cattle, still did the farming. And so she knows the involvement and the activity that being an extension agent has. But, you know, there probably is always a limit, and I've probably gone over that, and she's she's noticed that a few times. But she enjoys. I do a lot of traveling. Like I said, we were in Nashville last week at a meeting, and she was with me. So she does enjoy going along to some of these meetings that are traveling different places.
Yeah, I mean, just I honestly can't imagine just the sheer number that you're involved with. You know, I sit on some boards, and obviously running a business, it just, there is a lot of meetings. There's a lot that has to be done. So I was just talking with Dom before the show. And I was just like, man, I knew you were heavily involved. And then when we got your report back on what you're involved with currently, I was like, I don't know how we can keep all the topics straight. Like, you'd think at some point you'd be mixing top. Like, no, that was wrong association.
It happens. There's no doubt about it.
I just think it's neat. So let's talk about a lot of our listeners probably don't know what an ag extension agent does. Can you just dig in a little deeper with what the responsibilities of that organization are and what that job entails so they understand
Sure can. You know, there are over 3,000 counties in these United States here today, and every state has a land-grant university, and they just have one. In Ohio, of course, it's Ohio State. Michigan, it's Michigan State. Indiana, it's Purdue. Pennsylvania, it's Penn State, on and on. And what the Extension Service is started back with the 1917, I think it was a Smith-Lever Act long, long time ago, where they were trying to find a way to bring that university out closer to the people. And they form the Extension Service. And so basically, all our extension offices are an extension of that state's land-grant university. So our extension office here in Hancock County is a Ohio State University extension, Hancock County. The employees there, like I was an employee, works for Ohio State. And the organization is funded by three different entities. One is the federal government, one is the state government, and then the county government is also involved in providing an office and so forth. So it's kind of a neat situation that probably provides maybe too many bosses that one needs to deal with. But the whole idea is to develop programs and relationships with local people to help them live better lives. And by living better lives, everybody wins. It makes it a win-win situation. And today, our office here in Hancock County, as all other 88 counties in the state of Ohio, have an extension office contact that people can get involved.
Interesting.
And, of course, from the agriculture standpoint, we're going to be working with farmers primarily, but also agribusiness, putting out plots, trying to get them information, research information from the university, from USDA, anything that we can do to solve problems and help them become more successful. And that's what it's been doing for many, many decades.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, I know for a fact that a majority of the people have no idea of, you know, when you say extension office, what it really does deep down. A lot of people probably heard of it, but what actually goes on there, I don't think they probably know. So I appreciate you just.
Yeah. You know, one program that everybody's familiar with is 4-H.
4-H for sure.
Yeah, 4-H. There's basically four main program areas, agriculture, that I was involved with most of my career, but started with 4-H. 4-H is another program area. Family Consumer Sciences is the third one, and Community Development is the fourth one. And like in Hancock County, we have three extension, they don't call them agents anymore, they're educators. We have three extension educators that bring forth all four of those program areas as far as latest research, news, and anything that can help people solve problems and make a better life for themselves.
Mm-hmm. What does anything stand out from your job? You know, you were there 32 years. Is there any one project that stands out to you that was just really rewarding?
You know, one thing that I did, and of course everybody does different things and everybody has different entities they work with, but I developed a very, very close relationship with the University of Findlay equestrian program. Yeah. And I'm not a horse person, but if anybody's been out to that equestrian farm out south of Findlay, if you've never been there, you need to. It's just spectacular. The operation that they have, the people that work there, and of course here about 10, 15 years ago, they also added the animal science program. They've always had the pre-vet program. But I was able to form a really good relationships, and we were able to do research plots out there, and we've had several seminars. They've got tremendous facilities. And then from that, back in the days, this is probably way back in the early 90s, between them and I and other ones, we formed a program called Forages for Horses. And that thing just caught on fire. We went around the state of Ohio and adjoining states of Indiana, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, and we probably give 50 seminars. And it was all because of that great relationship that we had created with the University of Findlay, and I still know him well, and we have 4-H judging contests there and so forth, but it's just a diamond in the rough, I call it, there with that equestrian and animal science farm that they have there south of Findlay.
Yeah, it sure is appealing to the eye. I mean, they've done a really nice job with it. It's just a beautiful spot.
It is.
In general, whether you're a horse person or not, I love to see it. And you know, honestly, it brings people to Findlay that normally wouldn't be here. I mean, they get students from all over the place for
they
that.
Absolutely
specific,
do. Yeah.
You know, and honestly, yes. What a lot of people don't realize is how I can't tell you how many clients we've picked up because of that.
Sure.
You know, they move here, then they actually become residents of Findlay and they stay.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I've got two specific, really, really solid families that have moved to this area and stayed because of that program.
Yep.
It's really neat. It's just all those ripple effects that something like that have. So, no, kudos to you for that. I'm glad you shared that. So that's pretty awesome.
I know some people might think that since I'm a high estate person and high estate based that we would be competitors, but it's nothing even close to that. By working together, we're both better, unbelievably. Yeah. And I tell you, the operation that they have there south of Findlay is far better than we have down at Ohio State.
Oh, is it really? Safe.
Oh, my, yeah. Their facilities is just perfect. And it's attractive, and they pull people in, students in from all across the country.
Mm-hmm. They do. They really do.
They do, yeah.
Yeah, it's really neat to see that locally. And, obviously Ohio State, but, you know, again, we're here in Hancock County, so Findlay is near and dear to everybody's heart. And what they're doing over at the university here is, you know, they're no slouch. They've done a lot of nice things, and they've got a great organization there. So
certainly do.
I'd just like to pick your brain a little bit while we got you. What are some really large challenges and threats, maybe? I don't know if they're threats, but what are the challenges for ag locally here? You know, for our production people, our livestock people, what do you see anything there that's going on that should be of concern?
Well, one is always concern about regulations.
Yeah.
Farmers just want to farm.
Mm-hmm.
But they are faced with so many new rules and regulations. It's tough to keep up. I mean, for a person to farm today, I mean, they need to have a certification now in pesticides. They need to have a certification to put on fertilizer. They need to follow certain guidelines if they're going to go out and haul their manure. They just can't do that at any time of year or in any field.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes a lot of restriction on what they can do and how they can make it work. And the other thing going against them, when I was a kid back in the 50s and 60s, all our neighbors were other farm families. Everybody had a barn full of livestock. Everybody mm-hmm. was in it together. It's not that way today.
No,
all our neighbors are non-farm people, and they don't understand when we're out here combining and working ground late at night or needing to haul manure and all those kinds of things. It's a foreign entity to them, and so it makes it a little tougher. And yes, equipment has gotten bigger. We have fewer farmers. They're much larger farms. But we're so few as far as percent of the population that it's hard to understand. So that's one big major change that I've seen here over the years. And rural life in general is different. Rural farm kids used to be very different than town kids. Anymore, it's not that much different. Everybody's very mobile. Everybody has two or three cars. I remember when I was a kid, I lived the same place, 12 miles from Findlay. And if we wouldn't go into Findlay more than once every 3 or 4 months, maybe 5 months. And today, if I'm not in there 2 to 3 times a day, it's probably unusual.
Right.
With different groups and meetings. So everybody's so much more mobile. There's less difference between that. A lot of people have moved out into the rural areas and built homes and so forth. That's another really big change that I've seen over the years in the rural landscape.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. You mentioned some stuff about, you know, the manure. So I live just down the road from Charlie Smith and his dairy operation. So I know exactly when they're.
I know Charlie well. I sell grass seed on the side, and I've delivered grass seed orders and so forth to him. And every time I'm there, I just can't get enough of what he has to say. He's got an operation and a half. Boy, he has a lot of work, a lot of activity, but he gets her done. Does a good job.
Yeah, he's, you know, if anybody wants to see a hardworking, just find a dairy operation. You'll see how hard those people work. I mean, you know, I'm going to the deer stand at 5 a.m. Those guys are milking cows. It's just, it's a really interesting, it's a rewarding career for them guys, but they are certainly busy. You know, they're milking cows, and then they're farming on top of that. So they're just busy year round. There's always something to do.
There is.
It's interesting. You know, once in a while I'll show up and I'll check out what's going on, and you know what, I'll bring my boys down and watch them milk cows, and yeah, they're just great people in general to have as neighbors. But
it's funny
you say that about the manure, because you know they can, you know, it's got to be a certain temperature, it can only be certain months, they've got to do it a certain way, and quite a fiasco to drain those lagoons. And so much regulation, so that was a good topic there.
Sure.
Anything at the state and federal level or the worldwide level that's kind of a threat to the industry as a whole? Is it still just regulation?
Well, it's regulations, but, you know, farmers got to have a market. They can't make their own market. They've got that market is made for them, and a third or to a half of our products is exported. So this just makes it a world business.
Mm-hmm.
That export market is just critical, believe it or not. Our population in the United States is only, 5% of the world population?
Crazy.
I mean, it's hard to imagine. Look at all the people that need food, and that's our specialty here in this country. We do that more and better per acre than anywhere in the world. And so we need to have that market. And if that was ever shut off, our prices would crash.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we see tremendous fluctuations. Like if China has a buy or someone else has a buy, you're going to see a fluctuation. If that buy isn't there, the price goes down. So tremendous influence. And it's hard for the farmer because they have no control over it. And there's various marketing tools that they have. And every farmer tries to use a lot of those forward contracting, et cetera, kinds of tools. But it's hard. A farmer can be an expert at producing a crop. He also has to be an expert in marketing. That's also
pretty crazy. Important. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Playing the markets and basically, you know, it's on the Chicago Board of Trade, obviously, and then figuring out when to sell and when to hold and when to.
That's right.
You know, it's talk about stress. You're stressing about the weather all year long, and then you got to do right. worry about the markets. So it's a never ending. Stress factor of some level for everybody, but
it is.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of people don't understand that. You know, obviously prices are pretty decent right now, but they were not very decent there for a couple of years. And,
that's right.
You know, it just kind of goes. Same thing could be said about the milk prices. You know, there's so much up and down, and you know, livestock prices are up and down, and everything. So it's interesting to talk about that.
It's way too volatile.
It's very.
If people would think about it very long, they get ulcers and it would be unhealthy. And you can't think about it. I mean, you just got to do the best you can.
So you're a graduate of Arlington High School. What year did you graduate?
What was that again?
What year was that you graduated?
That was 1973.
1973 Red Devil.
Yes, certainly so, was.
It's a great school and a great community in general.
Yeah.
So you
did the same.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you've got some local. I saw you in the paper a couple weeks ago. So you're in some involvement with the Border Basin, right?
Oh yes, sure have been.
So are you just politicking that thing and just keeping things in order? Is that your role with it?
Well, no. I've always been working on behalf of the local farmer and the local rural resident. And this started many years ago because a long time ago they were trying to propose a diversion channel, a 9-mile diversion channel going from Eagle Creek and bending that around on the west side of Findlay to then go to the Blanchard. It's 9 miles. It's going to cut 14 roads many of my farmer friends, it was cutting their farms in half.
I see.
And so it made it very difficult. And so I was very much involved with that because it was very invasive. And this hub group that was created, Hancock United for a Better Blanchard is what that stands for. Steve Kramer, who actually spoke at that meeting, Steve and I are good friends, have been very, very close working together throughout the whole course of this. And when the diversion channel got dropped, and then they were proposing actually at first three basins, but it kind of ended up into this one Eagle Creek basin. Mm-hmm. And we still felt it was very invasive, taking a lot of farmland, several hundred acres.
Right.
That's very invasive. And so we just felt that there were better ways for flood control. We've been very much in favor of benching. But I know that they're really pushing for this basin, and we just didn't agree. And so I was involved on that behalf.
Yep, that's fair. Very fair. Yeah, we've got the whole out where I live in Washington and Cass Township. So the big thing now is the solar farms and the solar companies wanting to come in. And
I know.
Yeah, no, that's being discussed too. So it's
I know
just,
it is.
It's interesting to see. I don't know where it's going to end up.
I don't either.
It's just you talk about, you know, a couple thousand acres coming out of production.
Yes.
And that site. So I don't know what's going to happen. I know they got a meeting as we speak tonight. You know, here in the beginning of July, and it's just interesting. All the, you know, I don't even quite understand where it all comes from. Obviously, there's a lot of big money behind this stuff and huge corporations.
Oh yeah, you bet.
You know, when you talk about solar, wind, and it's definitely interesting, no matter which side you're on of it.
It is.
You know, so yeah. So, biggest reward in your ag career, is it just working with young people and getting them to understand responsibility, or giving them a shot? What does that look like for you?
Oh my! You just can't put a value on. Working with a young person and seeing their enthusiasm and interest developed, whether it's a livestock project or any other field, and then to excel on that later in life, go to college for that, make a career out of that, become a better person as a result of that involvement, that is unbelievably rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same way with adults. To something new coming down the line, a new practice, a new way of doing something. I remember when no-till farming started, and a lot of farmers were really scratching their head.
I'm sure they were.
How can we do that? How will that work? And it's just amazing. The thousands of acres now, they're now involved in no-till. And trying to figure out a way to increase your yield, lower your costs, and increase and make your standard of living that much better.
Yep.
There is no automatic in that process.
No, there certainly isn't.
You've got to do a lot of things correctly. You've got to lower your risk. There will always be risk. We'll never take that out of it. But there are many things you can do to lower your risk. And if I can just help a pinch in any part of that process, that's the reward that one can get.
That's pretty awesome. So you're sitting on 12 boards right now. Let's pick out a couple that you're really passionate. I mean, I know you're passionate about all of them, or you wouldn't sit on them. What right now is hot for you, and what's near and dear to your heart that you're really, really passionate about that one of these boards is working on?
Well, they're all good, and it's hard to pick one out. One that I've been spending more time with these last couple of years is with Ohio corn and wheat.
Okay.
And Ohio corn and wheat is actually divided up into three different boards. Basically, two boards work with checkoff dollars. You have the Ohio Corn Marketing Board and the Ohio Small Grains Marketing Program Board. And I happen to be on that small grains one. In fact, this year I'm actually chairman of that board. And basically, we take, you know, a cent or two a bushel, or a half a percent of what a farmer receives from their wheat and from their corn. and that money goes to a fund. And that checkoff board, just like pork has one, beef has one, sheep has one, those dollars can only be used for research, education, and promotion. Mm-hmm. With the whole idea that if we can congregate these dollars and maybe put some dollars into some research that farmers really, really need, or maybe promote the products that they're growing so that there's more demand, or we can educate the public. It's just amazing the level of ignorance out there with people today, okay? And if we can help just a pinch with that, that's where we use these checkoff dollars. Another third board with Ohio Corn and Wheat is the Ohio. Go ahead.
No, keep going.
And the other third board that we have is the Ohio Corn and Wheat Association, Growers Association. And what that board can do, and they can't use any of this money for that, for their purpose, but their main purpose is legislative. Look at all the bills in Congress, whether it's United States Congress or Ohio legislature, have influence on agriculture. Okay, agriculture needs a voice. So Ohio Corn and Wheat, just like Ohio Farm Bureau, Ohio Soybean, they're all down there promoting farming, promoting agriculture, and helping to represent that entity that's only 1.5% of the population anymore. Okay, so that makes a very, very important function. And each one of those boards have about a dozen to 15 members on, and they're throughout the state of Ohio. And I've made very, very close friendships with not only here in the state, but as I meet with them on the national level, it's just amazing the relationships and what you can learn from that and what you can learn from each other.
Awesome. Yeah, but you said a word that triggered me. It's ignorance. There's just a lot of it. There's just a lot of uneducated folks that just don't understand the ag community.
And, no, they don't.
I don't know. My wife actually just this week we were watching. You know, Monday they were pulling the wheat off the field, and she went in and started to get some stats of what 1 acre of wheat actually produces food wise.
Sure. There you go. Yes,
it was astounding.
Yes,
I mean, I wish I could remember. It was like thousands of boxes of cereal.
Yeah. Yes,
thousands of loaves of bread.
Yes.
All sorts of different things, and it was really neat to live. I wish I had the exacts in front of me, but just the amount of food that little 30-acre field that we live around was actually making for people.
Yes. Yep.
And then it's just interesting that, you know, just all the stuff we got to deal with, and I won't get too deep into that, but it's just amazing. It's amazing what, you know, farmers literally are feeding the world, and that there's
right.
No other way around it. You
That's
have
right.
to have farmers to eat. So,
yep.
It's really interesting. So,
well, they say back in the 40s, a farmer would produce enough for himself and like 30 other people.
Okay.
Today, a farmer produces enough for himself and like 160 other people.
Wow.
So it's just incredible. I often, when I give talks to elementary and I help the museum when the kids come through, we have an agricultural station. I always tell them 1861 is when the United States Department of Agriculture was formed. Abraham Lincoln was president in 1861. And when they formed USDA, he called that the People's Department because at that time, 90% of the people lived and worked on farms. 90%. Today, it's 1.5.
Wow.
Isn't that incredible? And look at the amount of food and produce and meat that we produce on the farm today. And we're only 1.5%. And when you're 1.5%, you're not close to the majority. So that's why you got to have a pretty loud voice at legislature and other places, because people aren't familiar with us. They don't understand us. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very easy sitting from the outside and says, well, we need to make that regulation. We need to make that restriction. We need to do this for the people as a whole. But they got to forget, if they make too many restrictions, they're not going to cut off their food line. Okay.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
That's right. It'd be tough.
Yeah, here's one of those quick stats I was talking about. on average, an acre of wheat will produce between 3,500 and 4,200 one-pound loaves of bread, just to give you an idea.
Sure.
1 acre.
Okay. That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing? I mean,
that is amazing.
Yep. That's a lot of bread.
That's a lot of bread. And the wheat that we produce in our area throughout Ohio, this is soft red winter wheat. Okay. There are six different classes of wheat. All our wheat really is doesn't go into bread. It goes into pastries, cookies and rolls and those kinds of things. Manel Milling and Fostoria, they're the ones mm-hmm. that are one of the primary creators of flour, soft red winter flour. Mm-hmm. But I've got friends out in Kansas. They grow hard red winter wheat. There's your bread wheat that's coming out of there. So every wheat class has their own particular unique use that comes out of these six different classes of wheat grown throughout our country.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Manel Milling, they do some awesome things.
Oh, you know, they're awesome. Yeah.
What they've done with that, you know, that specialty flour line. And
yes.
They've expanded like crazy over there. So,
they you have.
Know, Ford and, you know, some of the generations going through there, they've just done a really nice job. So that's awesome. What, since you touched on the six, what do they grow? Clear? Don't they grow a ton of wheat out like Idaho, Montana?
Oh, yes. Oh,
what are they growing out
there? A lot
there?
Of that, they're into spring wheat. They have a white and a red spring wheat up in there. Their winters are too long and hard mm-hmm. for them to do the winter wheat. So some of those areas, especially in North Dakota, Montana, Idaho, there's big wheat growing areas. Montana, it's kind of north central Montana, where they call it the wheat triangle. And about 90% of the wheat in Montana is grown there. And it's a heavy wheat grown area. And that's about all they grow. They really can't even alternate many crops. They'll leave fields fallow to sometimes if you follow one crop after another too much. You start to carry over diseases and other problems. But that's how they do it up there. Oregon, as you go up even into eastern Oregon, big wheat-growing areas. And right now, a lot of those areas are excessively dry. Mm-hmm. They're going through a drought right now, like in North Dakota, Montana. Yields are cut in half. And it's just, we've been there, and it's hard to imagine. But that's just one of the risks that farmers mm-hmm. have to deal with and trying to deal with the weather. And they've got that risk right now out west.
Yeah, it's amazing when you think about it. It just every year is different. You know, the 1 year, well, not too long ago, we were too wet and we couldn't plant anything.
Yep.
You know, and then there's other years where it's really dry. And there's years like so far, knock on wood, this year, you're getting rain once a week, which is perfect, you know. So
that's right.
Yep. It's crazy. It's just it's neat to talk about, though, and you're obviously very knowledgeable on crops and livestock and ag in general. So it's just, you know, if you've ever been out west, it's really neat to you follow and you run it. We stopped. Oh, we were in South Dakota and we ran into a custom farming organization.
Sure.
Operation, I should say. They had I don't know how many. They were running 9,500 deers, and they were
probably at least they had a dozen at least.
Oh, at least more. Yeah, and they had semis and fuel trucks, and just you know they had sleeper cabs, so they were all on the road for who knows how long till they you know they're farming hundreds of thousands of acres, and it was just really neat to see. And then we got out where we were going. We were heading to Montana. And then there was, you'd look across the field and there'd be like a dozen combines in the same field, in these massive fields. And it was just really pretty to see them harvesting that and those big groups. So it's different than it is around here where everybody owns their own equipment.
It
there's a little
different.
Custom, you know, but.
Yes. No, there's not. That's right. You're exactly right. There's no comparison to what goes on out there.
Yeah. It's just different. It's like,
it is. You know,
but it's neat to see it. There's just how things are done. And then. You know, just driving up there through Iowa and, you know, you get in through Indiana and Illinois and just those massive fields that go on as far as your eye can see. And it's just totally different. But
That's something that we can't realize or ever really see here in Ohio. And it's because of another commodity that we have here. And that's called people. We have a lot of people.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. So everything's a little chopped up and the wood lots and stuff are different, but yep, it's just neat to see other areas and what goes on in the ag. And, you know, we could probably tell stories, you know, for hours here,
good.
One last thing.
Okay.
Spending time with family. So obviously, how do you find time for family with all the boards you're on? What do you like to do?
You know, when I was involved as an extension agent, we have a state group, obviously, but there's also a national group. You know, when I was an agricultural agent, National Association of County Agricultural Agents was our group. And every year they would have a national meeting. And every year, guess what my family's vacation was? So you mix work and play. And through that process, my kids and I were probably in every state in this country. And of course, when we are at these conferences, a lot of people would also bring their children. And so they got to meet kids from all across the country. And we'd have tours that we'd actually go out onto farms, and we would learn and see up front how people farmed in that state, how they did things and how they thought and their challenges and their successes. And so so that was strong time with family, but they went with me. They followed my schedule, fortunately for me. Awesome. And so that was fun to do that. And we still go to a lot of meetings and things with family. And I'm fortunate to have, of course, my son is living on the farm right next to us, daughter over at Van Wert. She works for Ag Credit. She's an appraiser for that organization. And then I've got a daughter, got a couple kids over in Fredericktown. She's a nurse.
Okay.
And we're all fairly close. And so we're able to still spend a lot of time together. And I've got a lot of extended family. Like I said, we're going back several generations. So I've got a lot of cousins. I'm related to a lot of people. My mother is from Arcadia, so I'm related to a lot of people over in Arcadia.
Yeah.
So we're spread all over. And so it's been fun. It's been a fun run.
What, you said, you know, with all the farms you saw national, what was the neatest farm you ran across anywhere in the United States?
Oh gosh. I'm just trying to think. I was out at some big irrigated operations, I think maybe in Nebraska. If anybody would recall flying over, you got these giant circles.
Mm-hmm.
And to sit down and relate with people in Nebraska, Idaho had some neat things going on. And California is getting less in livestock, but they're huge in livestock and agriculture in California. You wouldn't think of that. But what Californians seem to like is a lot of regulations. And unfortunately, they're driving their farming population out.
Yeah, they're kicking them out.
Yes, they're leaving in groves.
Yeah, they got this beautiful ground to do stuff, and they just,
Yes. And they've got another commodity that sometimes is scarce, and it's called water. Mm. And if it comes down between your farm or local town getting water, guess who loses?
Yeah.
It's the farm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so they may be forced to leave just because society really isn't them anymore. I think down the road, Californians may wake up one day and say, what have we done? Because already for eggs and meat, especially poultry and pork, they've got to pay more. It's all got to be exported. It's all got to be imported in. Got to be trucked in. And so a lot of their rules and regulations, I'm not in favor of, and I think it may haunt them down the road. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. It just doesn't make any sense when you think about it. Yeah. Yeah, there's some neat stuff. Last story I'll say about ag is my wife and I spent an anniversary trip in Hawaii at the Big Island.
Oh, wow.
The amount, you will never guess this, but the amount of cattle ranches on that island are astounding.
Yeah.
I've never seen it. It is unbelievable to see, and it's so neat. You go back up into those mountains, and you feel like, to me, I felt like I was, without the scenery, of course, I felt like I was in southern Ohio, or it was nostalgic almost, that the amount of cattle that is raised on that island for food.
Sure.
And it's just really neat that you would never think of Hawaii as a working cattle ranch, but man, it was all over the place. It was so neat to see. Yeah. Back in there, and they're hauling, the livestock trailers around, the tractors are on the roads. It was just really interesting to me to see that clear out there, So
people don't think of that when they think of Hawaii. But guess what? People in Hawaii need to eat too, and they like beef. So somebody need to get it.
Yep.
So it's no better place than to get it right there. Sure.
It's really interesting. So, hey, Gary, I appreciate everything you do for the community.
Okay.
You're super involved with the Hancock County Fair. Obviously, you're still sitting on 12 boards. You've been involved with 45 organizations. Seriously, my heart is near and dear to the ag community. I've been involved with my whole life. We do appreciate what you're doing. It doesn't go unnoticed. Obviously, you're an inductee into the Hancock County Agriculture Hall of Fame, which is well deserving. I can't think of a better person who's donated their time and resources and given up, family time to help others. So we do appreciate that. Thanks for everything you do for Hancock County, Findlay, Ohio, and surrounding communities in the area. So we greatly appreciate that. And we appreciate you having on. You had some great stories to share with people, and hopefully it's educational for them, and they can they can certainly learn from you and learn about ag. And there's plenty of research they can do with the organizations you're involved with. But again, thanks for coming on, and we had a great time.
Thank you, Ryan and Dominic. You've got a great program going here. I commend you. I applaud you. Doing good work. Good conversation. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate that.
This has been the Hometown Highlights Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed this conversation. For similar interviews, you can subscribe to the podcast. Thanks again to our sponsors at Hitchings Insurance. Thanks for your time, and we look forward to the next show. This has been the Hometown Highlights Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed this conversation. For similar interviews, you can subscribe to the podcast. Thanks again to our sponsors at Hitchings Insurance. Thanks for your time, and we look forward to the next show.